Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Tolkien Road. John here. Greta, how you doing?
Hey. Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's been a busy last, like, 24 hours for me, but I have emerged from the darkness of my work emergency, ready to record another episode.
I'm glad that you have emerged.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Episode 197, 6 spiritual insights from Tolkien that will change your life.
Ooh.
Yeah. So that's what we're going to be talking about today.
Awesome.
Let me begin by saying that we were supposed to record, this episode was supposed to be with David Bates from Pints with Jack, the C.S. Lewis podcast. But unfortunately, because of my work emergency, we had to I didn't get the time to prepare that I normally get. So we had to reschedule that with David. So we will be doing that episode, hopefully, sometime in the next, next few episodes here, pretty soon. So you should go check out Pints with Jack regardless. If you are a Tolkien fan, then you should know more about C.S. Lewis, and you might already be a C.S. Lewis fan, and therefore you should just go check it out anyway. So,
word.
Check it. Thanks to our patrons, as always. You guys rock. And if you are not a patron and would like to become a patron, head on over to TolkienRoad.com /donate, or go to Patreon.com/TolkienRoad, and you can become a patron. Don't take a lot. We'll take what you can give, right?
Mm, yeah.
That's the way it works.
That is the way it works.
And hey, by the way, when you're able to donate, you get me that much closer to being able to devote more time to doing the Tolkien Road, so that I don't have to cancel guest appearances at the last minute that maybe you were looking forward to. So.
Oh, wow. I like how you spun that.
Little sales pitch there.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Clever.
Cha-ching. Rolling in. Let it rain. All right. So... Please also rate us on iTunes. Head on over there, leave us a 5-star rating, and say some nice things about us.
Please.
Nice. Be yeah. nice.
Keyword there is nice.
Yeah.
Kind.
Nice. We're nice. Be
sincere,
nice.
Sincere, but still kind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind
the world
and sincere.
Needs a lot more nice people right now.
We do need a lot of nice people.
All right. We'd love to hear from you. Send us correspondence at TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com, or go to our website, leave a comment on the episode you listen to. You can leave comments on past episodes, anyone you want to. So, if you're one of those people who's catching up or caught up or, something like that, it's always weird because people catch up and then they maybe had all these comments and didn't know about like where things stand now. We're trying to make it become more of a podcast where you can be in touch with what we're doing right now, but also go back and listen to the old episodes. So I don't know if that works super well from our listeners' perspective. Maybe we need to start like a separate spinoff podcast that's more of like what's happening now. I don't know, but anyway,
you lost me.
Anyway, never mind then.
Okay.
All right. Facebook, Twitter, yeah, all that. So and then SpeakPipe, don't forget about SpeakPipe. You can send us a voicemail via SpeakPipe on the website, and if you do, you will be heard on the next episode, your voice and everything. All right. Don't forget to head on over to YouTube and subscribe to the Tolkien Road channel over there. There's an 8-part guide to the Silmarillion that is our newest thing over there, and we're going to be doing more videos coming over there. I mean, I should really say me, because Greta has no desire to participate in the YouTube aspect of things, which I can't blame her for, but, I think she would be a star over there, but,
what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But,
I'm quite content with the podcast.
More glory for me. That's all
that's
I'm saying.
Right. That's right. And it's deserved. Glory.
Oh, well, thank you.
So soak it up. Yeah.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah.
All right, I will.
Okay.
So, we're going to be current plan for the next few episodes. We will get back to that episode with David Bates of Pints with Jack before too long. And we are on the next one, we're planning to look into Tolkien's political views. So last episode we looked at Tolkien's, it was called Tolkien versus the Nazis. And it was, look into his real like contempt and, just disdain for Nazi and racist ideology. And I thought that was a pretty fascinating exploration, Greta. This one is going to be this. We're going to look at his actual, I guess you could call them positive political views. Not that he was a particularly political person. He certainly wasn't an activist, but he still did express a lot of interesting things in his letters. And I think there's other things we can explore from his own works, like other aspects of his fictional works that could maybe speak to what his if he had a political philosophy, like what might it have looked like? So.
Oh, so we're going to talk politics?
Well, not politics in a contemporary sense.
Okay.
Right? Because we really try to steer clear of, like,
I was going to say, I hate politics. Like, well, I hate them.
You and me both, but more of, like, what did his political... Because once upon a time, like, political philosophy, like, you know, was... I don't know. It seemed a little more thoughtful than it does now. Like, And I just think, from what I know of his views... I think it'll be a pretty interesting topic and help us get closer, you know, again, to his own heart, which is a lot of what this podcast is about.
So, okay. Fair enough.
So just come to it with an open mind and, you know, no hackles up or anything like that. We're not going to get into any, modern politics or anything like that. It's just going to be more of a discussion of, you know, what were his general views in that area.
Okay.
So, all right. And then we'll also, we'll be doing some other interesting things. And then we've got our 200th episode coming up. I've got something, I think, a little fun planned for that.
Oh.
Not too fun. I'm too boring to be too fun, but but fun in my book. And then lots of third age discussion coming after that. So, yeah.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. So, Greta, we're going to talk about this little thing I made called Six Spiritual Insights from Reading Tolkien. Okay. It's actually Six Spiritual Insights from Tolkien That Will Change Your Life. So I want to say that this is actually a little mini book, mini guide PDF thing that I made a few years ago, and I lost track of it for a while, but then I found it and I wanted to get it back out there for people to have. If you'd like this, you can head on over to tolkienroad.com/spirit, and that's where you can find the guide and find out how to download it over there. So that's all you got to go, tolkienroad.com/spirit, and you can check that out and follow along with our discussion. Or if you listen to our discussion, just go, and then you like it and you want to know more about what's in there, head on over to that, tolkienroad.com/spirit. So
all right,
so it's, you know, and here's the other thing, it's been a pretty dark few weeks, you know, especially here in the United States, and this is, of course, coming on what was already kind of a dark period in a lot of ways with the COVID-19 crisis, and that's really going on throughout the world. So I really think that, you know, one of the themes of Tolkien, one of the great spiritual themes of Tolkien, is that out of tremendous darkness, out of the shadow, good arrives, right? Like we can find the good, we can find unity, we can find peace, we can find beautiful things, right? Emerging from that darkness, true and lasting light. And that's one of the reasons that, you know, I thought it might be a good time to spend a little time here, because I think there's a lot of reasons to feel maybe discouraged. There's a lot of reasons to feel even despair for a lot of people right now. And Tolkien's worldview was one that went into, you know, it really went into the depths of, like, some really dark places. But there's always that aspect of the greater light above it. There's always that aspect of this, there's some light that sits above all the darkness that's unquenchable. And that ultimately in the end will win, right? That has the final say. Even when things look their darkness, that's maybe when it's about to turn.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
In some magnificent way.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just hope everybody in this episode can find what is that heroism that you're being called to, that, like, kind of ordinary heroism that you're being called to. And maybe this will help you find that. I know that's what Tolkien has meant to me in a lot of ways, over the years. And one of the reasons I love his outlook so much is because he helps you maybe better discern your path to being this ordinary hero, not somebody who's like, look at me, I'm so awesome. You know, like so many people can be these days, right? You know, I'm so wonderful. You just need to follow me and I'll tell you how everything gets done. This was a guy who was just writing books and shared some thoughts, but wrote something beautiful because he kind of didn't care what everybody else thought, right?
Yeah.
But he followed his call.
Yep.
And he did something amazing for the world, right? So, yeah, why I wrote this. It's really, this PDF, this little mini guide, is really, it's about what drew me to Tolkien in the first place. it's not really for me. It's never been for me about the Dungeons and Dragons, if you will, right?
The fantasy part of it. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Like, and don't get me wrong. I like all that stuff. I think that stuff's cool, right?
Yeah.
But it's not like Tolkien exists for me, and you obviously know this. You all obviously know this because this is episode 187 of a podcast just about Tolkien. But it's not like Tolkien is just like another like fantasy author for me. There's something much greater, much deeper in his works than I find in most other works of that genre. And I think a lot of the people who work in that genre would salute him in that way too, right? So, lost my place. All right, there we go. So I would call that, why I wrote this is really I wanted to explore a little bit more and share with you all the philosophical, moral, and spiritual fibers of his works, right? Those underlying undergirding aspects of the stories of Middle Earth and the other writings that he had, and get to things that can actually be transformative for our lives, right? That can actually pull us out of a dark place, that can actually give us hope for the future, that can, you know, transform who we are and help us find meaning, right? A deeper and greater meaning, right? And a lasting meaning too. A meaning that even transcends death.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
So, so that's where I'm coming from. Thoughts?
No, I think that's, I mean, yeah, I think it's good.
Okay.
I think that's a really beautiful lead-in.
Right on. Okay. First point. First section, who we are, sub-creators all. So what did this section say to you, Greta?
Well, it basically said to me that, well, obviously sub-creation is a very Tolkienian term, right? It's the idea that we all in some way participate in creation. Obviously not in the original creation, that was by God, or in the Silmarillion by Eru, right?
Eru.
But that we all are called to share our creative gifts in one way or another. And that means different things for different people. So it's kind of, it's something that we need to be on the lookout for, something that we need to be discerning. Like, what are my gifts? How can I contribute, in a positive way, right? To enhance and protect the creation that we have been given.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Here's the quote I picked out to support this. Each there's six sections in this thing, right? Six insights. Duh. Okay. So here's the quote I picked out for this first section on sub-creators all. So great is the bounty with which man has been treated that he may now perhaps fairly dare to guess that in fantasy, he may actually assist in the effoliation and multiple enrichment of creation. That's like the last, I think that's the very last line of On Fairy Stories, or close to it. And it's a little bit, I mean, Tolkien was nothing if he wasn't a little bit wordy at times. But if you break that quote down, it's really so beautiful because it basically says that we as human beings have this incredible dignity that we get to participate in the ultimate creative act. And you're right. It's not like we're God and we made everything out of nothing. But at the same time, like we seem to participate in the creative act of God in a way that's utterly unique. Right?
Right.
We do things as human beings that the other creatures on this planet, which are is all the creatures we know about, are incapable of doing.
Because we're made in the image of God.
Right.
And we all have immortal souls.
Right. And I would even go so far, you know, it's been a while since I actually wrote this, but as I've thought more about some different things, I would even go so far as to say that we are like creation is something that's in progress. Like I read a really startling thought a little while ago that basically said, like, if you kind of break it down, I'm not getting into, like, you know, nobody misinterpret my words to think I'm getting into, like, you know, like literalism in the Bible or anything like that, like a literalistic interpretation. But if we kind of just like look at, you know, the meaning, you know, the whatever you want to call it, the allegorical, the poetic meaning or whatever of the first text of the first chapter of Genesis, you've got these 6 days of creation, and on the sixth day you have man, and then on the seventh day God rests. And in that, I read this amazing quote that basically put out there that like, we still are in the sixth day. So in other words, like you see all 7 days of history, and then like on the seventh day, God comes to a rest and everything seems to be all good. And that maybe we're still in that sixth day, right? That maybe we are in the process of being created ourselves. And part of that process is our own participation in creativity, wow. Right?
Yeah.
That part of, and think about, you see this reflected in the story of Ainu Lindele, right? In the story of the Ainur, right? Because he creates these beings that he then tasks with completing his creation, right?
Yes.
It's,
yeah.
So, I mean, this gives this incredible, it gives this incredible significance and this incredible dignity to, you know, to the labor of our hands. And I think that extends not just to like kind of traditional things we think of as creative, artistic endeavors and so forth, but I think it actually extends to, you know, everything we give ourselves to as human beings.
Right. All of our work.
Right.
Because not all of us are called to what is typically thought of as the creative, you know, the creative pursuits.
Right.
Whereas, you know, I'm guilty of thinking of being creative as being, well, I'm not a good writer and I'm not a good, you know, musician and I don't draw well.
You're a decent musician.
Okay. I'm a decent musician.
You don't give yourself enough credit there.
I don't consider myself the creative type.
Yeah.
Let me say.
I feel you.
But so it's really, so I love that interpretation and being like, well, you know, I'm a nurse. So that's the gift, you know, I am create, like I don't have to be an artist, you know, in the traditional sense to be an active participant in this, you know, effort of subcreation, but that I am contributing in the work that I'm called to.
Yeah. Boom. Yeah. That's, I mean, that's exactly what I'm getting at, right?
Yeah.
And I think there's something to be said. I think Leaf by Niggle shows us that maybe there was an insight that Tolkien had somewhere along the way that, you know, was like, it's not just our, like, kind of the creative acts either, but, like, the more, it's maybe, like, the moral acts, right? It's maybe the acts of heroism, the acts of, you know, the acts of self-sacrifice that are perhaps, like, the even greater creative acts, right? That are the, like, highest creative acts we can actually partake in.
Yeah.
Right?
I would
because
agree.
In doing so, we give ourselves to the life of another, right? We give ourselves for the life of another.
Right. Which is exactly the model that Christ laid out.
Which, if that's true, then motherhood is like one of the highest callings you could possibly have, right?
Yes.
So give yourself some credit here is all I'm saying. All
right. I'm giving myself tons of credit right
but,
now.
But I had a good thought and then I lost it. But anyway. Okay. You're a mean cook. That also. So... you're really good. So you're, you know, that's something I can't do.
Oh, well, thanks.
All right. Moving on. Insight number two, the way things really work. In letter 89, Tolkien said, I remember saying aloud with absolute conviction, but of course that's how things really do work. We actually did an episode on this particular letter, I believe.
I remember talking about that. And I remember the mental image that I still have that mental image of Tolkien riding his bike, you know, down the street in England, past an infirmary. And then he's just like, oh, he has a light bulb, right? Moment. He's like, oh, yeah, of course. Of course that's how things really do work.
I know. It's such
I just love, like, I just love it. I just feel like it's classic Tolkien.
I know. It's such a great, like, mental image, you know? Like,
yeah.
You almost want there to be like a movie made about just like that one, that one episode, just so you can see it with your own eyes. But yeah, his basic insight here is that resurrection is the way things really work. That, and he spoke about this in other places. He was writing near an infirmary, and he looks at this infirmary. You know, you don't really use that word in the U.S.
A hospital.
It's a hospital, right? It's a place for sick people. And and he's riding by this place, which is maybe not thought of as a particularly like happy place. And then all of a sudden he just has this epiphany. It's like it came out of nowhere from heaven, right? And he just is like, of course that's the way things really work. Like death doesn't have the final say, right? Death is actually the thing that leads to new and greater life,
mm-hmm.
Through the power of Christ's resurrection.
Yep.
And yeah, it's just a really cool little episode, and one of those things that like I think it's so important to remember. It's the thing that has been such a consolation to me as a Christian for so long, right? Is this foundational thing that like death cannot hold the power of love and the power of Christ, right? And that in his own crucifixion, it led to resurrection and broke open the bonds of death,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
It set mankind free,
yep.
right? And so our lot...
Once and for all.
Our lot in this life is to realize that freedom,
mm-hmm.
right?
And to live in that freedom.
Live in the light of that freedom.
Yeah, live in the yeah. light of that freedom.
All right. The next insight is number three, the cure for spiritual depression. So Tolkien said in Letter 250, the only cure for sagging of fainting faith is communion. So at one point or another, we all go through periods of spiritual darkness in our lives. And you may call it depression, but I'd even go so far as to call it an existential bleakness, a period wherein the beliefs we've built our lives on are put to the test. But Tolkien was a big believer in the power of the Eucharist. As a Catholic, it was the center of his faith. And so in Letter 250, he was writing to one of his sons who was talking about his own sagging faith. I mean, this communion really communicates to us the closeness of Christ and the darkness of our lives, right? In the dark times we go through. Can you agree with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's a reason it's such an important thing for Catholics, and it expresses that real presence that God is there, with us, and the quiet and of whatever moment we find ourselves in, that we always have access to him, right? That we always have access to him in the most intimate of ways.
Yeah. And I think even as a non-Catholic, I believed that. Mm-hmm. Like I truly believe that, you know, Jesus is everywhere and you can always talk to him and, you know, all that. But now as a Catholic and having the Eucharist and having access to adoration, it's, you know, I mean, we are feeble human beings, and it just really helps you can know in your brain, but to be able to see, you know, to see that consecrated host and to be able to receive it, know that like he's there, you know, I mean, it helps be able to see it with your own two eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a huge blessing for me, as a Catholic. And if I had, you know, if Catholic had said something like that to me before I was Catholic, I wouldn't have gotten it like at all. But so it's something I feel like you definitely have to experience to truly believe. But you know, it helps with that whole faith thing, because having faith is hard.
Absolutely.
And being able to actually see something that we believe is Jesus, is, you know, body, blood, soul, and divinity, is it's a huge lift.
Absolutely.
To the spirit and the soul.
Yeah, and to be able to receive it as well.
Absolutely. So, yeah, that's even better.
Right. So, and it's, you know, it's food for the journey.
It is.
Right.
It's like, the elven bread that they live on. In their journey. It's
I mean, I was thinking of that, but now I can't think of limbus.
Limbus, that's it. Yes. It's our limbus.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, number four, insight number four. Evil shall be good to have been. Whoa.
I know, right?
There's a pretty
I read that
one.
Twice. I was like, wait, did I read that right?
This is from the Silmarillion chapter 11. Even as Eru spoke to us, shall beauty not before conceived be brought into Ea, and evil yet be good to have been. And I think that's a quote from Manwe. And this is after, the great catastrophes of Valinor that caused the Noldor to leave. Murder, destruction of the trees, the theft of the Silmarils, all these horrible things. And Manwë, looking back on all of this, says, "Even as Eru spoke to us, shall beauty not before conceived be brought into Ea, and evil yet be good to have been." So there's this real mystery that is all through Tolkien's works. And it's this idea that evil is never a good thing in and of itself, right? And by this statement, he's not saying, like, well, you should go commit acts of evil because that leads to good. But what he's saying is that when evil befalls us, and even when we find ourselves looking back and saying, I did something evil, right? And feel kind of ashamed of that, right? That even through that, there is a greater good that can and will emerge, right? That we don't yet know. And that's related to that creative power of God, right?
Right. I mean, we see that even just through the, you know, the crucifixion, which is, you know, that was the worst. You would think that would be the worst possible thing that could ever happen.
Right.
Man killing God. But look at all the good, you know, without the crucifixion, we don't have the resurrection.
Right.
Right. So it can be hard, you know, especially in dark moments to really hold true to that faith that, oh, this, you know, good will come from this.
Mm-hmm.
And we might not always see it, you know, but it's, we just have to have the faith that that's what's going to happen eventually in some way or another.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And to believe that our ways are not God's ways, and God's ways are much bigger and better than ours.
Yeah. I mean, we see this in a big way also in the story of Frodo. And, you know, the fact that he has to go through all these evils, but we see this just incredible story of heroism that emerges. It's especially hard to grasp this when we're actually experiencing a painful evil.
When you're right in the middle of it,
when
absolutely.
You're right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
When you're in the valley of the shadow of death, nothing about it seems good.
Mm-mm.
And, but yet we have this testimony, we have this witness, right? And Tolkien's works witness to this truth, right? And it was something I think that he reflected upon greatly in his own life. So,
mm-hmm.
And even through all of that, we have this assurance. If you go back to number two, right, that resurrection is the way things really work.
Mm-hmm.
We have this assurance that even through all of that, that the evil never has the final say, right, over any of it, right?
Right.
That nothing is actually lost.
Nope.
Right.
Nope.
Nothing can be lost.
Right.
In the end. Right?
Because evil has been conquered.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, number five, Christianity is history's plot. So he says in On Fairy Stories, the Gospels contain a fairy story or a story of a larger kind which embraces all the essence of fairy stories. But this story has entered history in the primary world. The birth of Christ is the eucatastrophe of man's history. The resurrection is the eucatastrophe of the story of the incarnation. For those of you who aren't Christians, who are listening, you know, we say this not to be controversial, not to provoke, but to say like that this was an idea that was central to Tolkien's own outlook. This was an idea that was central to, you know, the things that drove him to create the Lord of the Rings, right? And his other works. But it also, you know, that little bit right there, he talks about it in the context of eucatastrophe. So we've talked a good bit about the resurrection already, but this reminds us that like history, like human history actually has a plot, right? That it's actually a story that we're inhabiting. Each of us has our own individual stories too, mm-hmm. which reflect this story,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
But in the greater sense, history, Christianity is the plot of history. So, Greta, any thoughts on that?
I mean, it's so, like, I mean, I feel like we could talk for an episode just on that alone.
Right.
So I don't want to get us started on that, but it is I mean, the gospel is, it's just central to everything.
Yeah. There's an interesting, I mentioned something in this section that says Tolkien cared so much about the gospel story that he viewed the stories of Middle Earth as a sort of precursor to it. And so we've done episodes where it talks about the significance of March 25th, for Tolkien. The date the One Ring is destroyed, March 25th, is the date of the Annunciation, which is literally the day of the Incarnation.
Right.
The kind of traditional date of the Incarnation.
Yes.
And it's in the traditional date of the crucifixion as well in some reckonings.
Oh, so, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, you know, and of course Good Friday shifts based on the year, but there's some that believe it did fall on March 25th. And that's possible because we know it fell within the week of Passover. So it just depends on what year it actually happened.
Okay.
So number six, the last insight here is true power, right? So in letter 131, Tolkien says, "The wheels of the world are often turned not by the lords and governors, even gods, but by the seemingly unknown and weak." So this is just, again, another one of those incredibly encouraging thoughts to say that, like, you know, so many of us so often feel so small and helpless and weak compared to all of the powerful people we see in the world and all of the people who are super famous and super rich and all this kind of stuff. And all those people have their own stories too, and they have their roles to play. But what Tolkien says here is that it's really not those people that, you know, you think of as being the most important people in the world that are actually the most important people in the world. But it's actually the little people. It's the people who you wouldn't give a second thought to.
Mm-hmm. It's the Frodos and the Sams.
Exactly. And that's all because, and that, I mean, think about what a tremendous theme of that is. And, you know, the Gandalf is the only one who recognizes the important role that the hobbits are going to play.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
When
everybody
mm-hmm.
else is just like, oh, they're these like backwards little people that, you know, who cares about them. Right.
Right.
And, you know, Gandalf recognizes this. So there's wisdom in recognizing this. There's wisdom in saying, like, wait a minute, maybe I shouldn't care so much about what, you know, this politician or that politician or this celebrity or that celebrity or, you know, this talking head or that talking head thinks about anything. But maybe I should actually, like, be attending to the little people in my life, the insignificance in my life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And paying them a little more attention, right?
Yeah.
I know as a father, this is something that comes back to me often because I'm always so busy in my work and I'm just, you know, every once in a while I have to step back and just say, like, wait a minute, my greatest responsibility is, like, to my kids. Like, I don't think I can ever go wrong by spending too much time with them, but I, like, find so many excuses not to.
Mm.
And not because I want to, but because I feel like all this other stuff is kind of more important, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
So anyway, convicting thought, I guess.
But. Totally. Yeah.
Any final thoughts on that?
No, I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, it's so contradictory, I think, to how our society views power, mm-hmm. right? And the powerful. And it can be really challenging to take that step back and, you know, have that more Tolkienian perspective on who is it, you know, that I should really be listening to, that I should really be paying attention to.
Yeah.
You know,
this one is really like a great examination of conscience. Like,
it is.
Just to be like, just every day to think, like, have I cared too much about, like, all of the stuff that's going on in the world that I can't do anything about? Or have I actually, like, just tried to work at the things that are actually, like, something I can do? Right.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Because
yeah.
everybody, I mean, doesn't everybody want to be like the hero, right?
Yeah.
That, like, rushes off to you know, to help tsunami victims and, you know, like, feed the poor in third world countries. And we need people to do that,
mm-hmm.
for sure. But I know it can be easy for people to get down on themselves when they can't do that for whatever reason. You know, they don't have their work doesn't allow them to do that, or they have too many responsibilities at home or whatever. And so just being able to reorder your perspective and be like, you know what? My mission field is right here, and finding those opportunities to serve where you are, to bloom where you're planted, to choose a rather cliche phrase, but
bloom.
There you go. All right.
Nice. Good thoughts.
Thanks.
Good stuff. So that's it. That's the six spiritual insights, guys. So there's actually a lot more food for thought in the actual guide itself. We just kind of skimmed the surface of it in this little discussion. So I encourage you to head on over again to tolkienroad.com/spirit, and you can find out how to actually get this little guide for yourself and read through it. And
it's a good read.
I hope you all enjoy it. And I hope you all do. And I hope you all enjoy it. So please do. So that's pretty much all we got for this week. I do want to get one quick letter because we're trying to get a letter every week. This one's from Evan D. He says, "Hello, John. After hearing your tentative theories, I have come to a conclusion on this that I think explains this. And so the subject of the email is my thoughts upon Thorin's making more important the role of a mother's figure in growing up. He says, hobbits are largely agrarian and similar to early English life. Why would this not be reflected in child rearing? At that time, child rearing was a largely maternal duty, from punishment to praise. Until a child learned to trade or worked either under a tradesman or their father, morality, seriousness, and other major formative thresholds were the mother's business. Maternal parenting became soft, if you will, in recent history. Before the mid to late 1800s, mothers beat and whipped their children as they saw fit for discipline. Tough love was the only way for much of history. Ergo, learning the harshness of the world and having a man made of oneself, if you will, was a maternal duty. Hence, Thorin's seemingly nonsensical statement. My best to you and those close to you, Evan."
Wow, that's good.
Yeah, really good. That's so again, really good. This is in the context of that question of, I think it was originally raised by Marilyn, the librarian, of like, why does, in The Quest of Erebor, why does Thorin say that his mother died too early?
Right when they're talking about Bilbo.
Because he's talking about how soft he is, and he's saying his mother died too soon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so this is an interesting thought, and one I hadn't really thought of, but I can definitely see that as a possibility. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, because that would have been the mother's responsibility, right? To whip those boys into shape.
Whip them into shape.
Dad was out in the field.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Good stuff.
Yeah, very good stuff.
Thanks, Evan.
Thank you, Evan. All right. Well, I think that's all we've got time for this week, everybody. So appreciate you listening. Special thanks to our patrons. Oh, let me remind you, we were supposed to do with David Bates today. We will get to him from Pints with Jack. Head on over to Pints with Jack and start listening to that podcast. And then we'll look forward to our episode with David in a few weeks.
Yeah, so I'm excited about that.
Special thanks to our patrons. You guys rock. And a special thanks, double special thanks to our $5 or more patrons, Eric B.
Daniel P.
David B.
Chuck F.
Ish of the Hammer.
Chris L.
James L.
Zeke F.
James A.
Emilio P.
Shannon S.
Teresa C.
Asia V.
Brian O.
Robert B.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, y'all.
Thanks, all of our patrons.
Absolutely. And thanks to all of our listeners. We will talk at you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.